welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry. It's going to be kind of from the hip today, Dave.
Yeah, we got a lot of things to kind of cover. And so,
both of us were just griping about obligations and time and all that.
Lord.
And stuff we got going on in our personal lives. So we are going to play fast and loose with the rules today. I want to thank Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring the show.
Well, and I wanted to say thank you to the Howa. My son took out the 308.
Oh, he did.
On his hunt.
Yes.
He went and he was doing great with it and it's shooting the range and stuff. And he took the Howa 308 out for his deer hunt. So No.
Okay.
The gun shot fantastic. He just did not.
Oh, bummer.
It's just one of those things, you know. And he was hunting with some buddies. So there was some cross communication on a few situations.
Yep.
But he loves the gun, thinks it's just
perfect.
That's
that same gun that you killed your antelope with?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great rifle.
Oh, I love that thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, shout out to Legacy Sports on producing a super nice 308.
Affordable, accurate rifle.
Yes, all day.
And, you know, that leads me, so before we start going squirrel and jumping off in a bunch of different directions, we'll stay on point with what we wanted to talk about this first segment. Probably some of the stuff your son experienced on that hunt will bleed into one of the things we're going to cover later, which is booming new hunter numbers.
Yes.
But everybody leaving and quitting after a year or two, a season or two.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll
dive into that. So some of that stuff, that I've been reading up on and getting a little deeper into the weeds into what they call, it's a national program. It's called the R3 program.
Okay.
It's re-engagement, retention,
okay. And
recruitment. So R3.
Those are the.
That's kind of like the platform for hunting and for activities, trying to keep people in, bring new people in, and retain them in it.
Okay.
So this is more along the lines of the retaining part.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's not getting reported so that the numbers look really good. So we'll get into that.
All right. Let's do Chucker real quick first. And I think you would agree, and you just said you talked to Logan, who we had on the show. And he's seen the same thing. I think we said it on one of the shows, but if you haven't gotten out yet this season, I would highly encourage you to maybe think about choking down. So if you normally shoot an IC or something, maybe bump up to a mod and then larger shot size, basically what you would run for the last week of the season, do it now.
Yeah. I just changed my choke to a mod because I was running an IC.
Yeah.
And I just switched to a mod. I know Logan was making some changes because the birds that you are getting, they're big. They
are really big,
hardy adult birds.
Polished spurs on them, old birds. Yeah.
Super nice looking birds. Everyone I've talked to so far, they're just really jumpy.
Yes.
40, 50 yards out, they're up.
Yes.
So that's been the big challenge right now. I know Logan's been out every weekend and he's gotten himself a pretty good number of birds. He's having to work for him. He's having to work real hard, and his dog's having to work real hard. So
what's he running for a dog?
He has a GWP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So a pointing dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's what I always think, like, okay, man, if you're running like a flusher or something, they're going to get up out there a ways anyway.
Right.
But even with pointing dogs this season, man, they're wily.
Yeah, they're super wily. And I noticed when took Gage up, some of them were staying like too tight. Gage got on point, walking up, trying to figure out where the bird is.
Yeah.
And a bird jumps up behind me. I must have walked past him at 2 feet.
Are you getting like those staggered rises where you'll have onesies and twosies, and then while you're sitting there picking your nose, here come three or four more, and then you're trying to reload, and then here come another two, that sort of thing?
No, well, where we went was not very far from here. I didn't have a lot of time, but I knew if I got up there, there's always a few birds up there just to tinker and just wanted to get Gage
the dog out.
Wanted to get him out as well. And we just got into one small little group of, I think there were like four or five
birds. Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And now there's only two
in
the group now.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, for sure, there's less two. And then when we were walking back out, just happened to have one bust out of the bushes in front of me. And I dropped that one. So.
Nice.
But it was a nice quick little 2-hour morning.
I love those.
Yeah.
Love them.
Beautiful sunrise. It was so nice up there. But it was that was the only one where I was like, "What? Where'd that and one
they,
come from?"
They get up a ways out on you.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I was lucky to
connect.
To do it. Yeah, to connect. I think the first shot hit the bird pretty good, and I must have had a couple BBs hit another bird, because then a second one was kind of, he was still flying, but he was like drunk flying.
Yes.
So then I unloaded a few more shells in his direction, and he finally went down.
Okay. I asked, because I just got Fletch back.
Yeah, I'm stoked to get involved in that.
He's such an easygoing, lovable dog, Dave. But I was picking Aaron's brain from Battleborn Bird Dogs. I was asking him because it's like the same thing we do with guides and outfitters. Like, I'll ask them what they're seeing because they're out there all the time. And same thing. I mean, Aaron, that's his job, right?
Yeah.
So he's out constantly. And he agreed too. He has shot, of all the birds he's shot this season, one young bird.
That's what he said.
He said, otherwise they're all old, big birds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I go back to that. I think we already covered that once, but so far this season, that chucker forecast that came out was extremely accurate as far as just, I don't know why.
I agree with you. I went back and read through it thinking, okay, just from what I'm hearing and what I've experienced, I'm like, this thing was pretty bloody accurate.
Yeah.
We had a person come in with a California sheep, and him and his party, they were heading back up to camp for a few more days and chase birds because they said there were just so many birds.
Yeah.
Just on their hunt, he said, we did notice they're jumping really easy early, but there's a lot of birds where they were. They were in an area.
An area, yeah. An area with sheep.
Yeah, exactly.
That narrows
an area
it down.
With some sheep.
I've seen big, in fact, just this last weekend, I mean, massive covey sizes, a staggered rises, but they just, I don't know. Yeah. It's going to be work.
Yeah.
It's going to be a season
be fun.
Of work.
It's going to be a good time. I'd rather get out there and have birds jump early and see them, then build a plan, then go out there like we've all done way too many times and go out there and hike the hills for 3, 4, 5 hours and never see a bird.
Yes.
I would rather not.
I don't want one of those seasons.
No.
Yeah.
I would rather see the birds jump and go, dang it.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can get back on these guys.
Well, and I've been lucky getting on them a second or third time. And here's what's weird, and this is just one of the areas I've been to. The second time I got on the covey, they held much tighter.
Oh.
So I go figure, and that's why I was able to get birds. But that initial flush was out there at like 60, 70, and it's an area I've got kind of wired as far as how I hunt it. And they went across the bowl, and I was like, oh, perfect. I know right where they're going. And so it was like a couple hours later when I was making the big loop and coming back out, I was like, all right, that covey's going to be in this general vicinity. And they got up at like 15 yards. They held tight. And it was the same covey.
Maybe it's just ground cover or who knows what.
Or maybe since I didn't bang away at them on that first flush, they thought, oh, we can just sit tight. We're good.
Yeah, this guy doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're good. That second time. They gave me another look and I thought, perfect.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I don't know, man. It's been a weird season.
And it's just the beginning.
It is. Well, we're in November. Yeah. We got a lot of days left in the season to get out and figure out what's what. Another weird thing, and we're going to go into this on some of the upcoming segments, lost hunters, lost bird dogs.
Yes, that's...
I was telling you earlier, I've seen more, hey, if you're in this area, please keep an eye out. Here's my dog. This, whatever happened.
Yeah.
I've seen basically what I normally see, the number of posts in a season, I've seen already, and we're only at the first month.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's more hunter involvement on that Nevada Chucker Hunters Facebook group, or if it's just one of those weird people are losing their dogs.
Yeah, it's weird. And I've noticed a few posts where it's like, hey, we were hunting today and we ended up with an extra dog. Anyone missing?
Yes.
And they'll have a picture of some dog with a collar on, and you're like, anyone missing this dog? This is where we were hunting.
Right.
Like it's a Brittany or it's a this or it's a, and you're like, holy moly, man. Like, you know, so yeah.
What's going on out there?
Yeah. You kind of makes you wonder. Like,
did you see the one? And then we do have to take a break here, but did you see the one where the guy was like done hunting and he posted on there that his dog was hit by a dirt bike out at Moon Rocks?
No.
Ran off And so he was looking for it, and I guess he did find it, and I guess the dog's okay, so it all worked out. But I was thinking back over the years, and I'm like, how in the world did your dog get hit by a dirt bike? How did that situation transpire? Well, it sounded like he was back at his truck.
Oh, and then just some people were riding their dirt bikes around on the road, and the dog ran out, got thumped.
That
sounds like what could happen now.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got a lot of those dogs that like chasing cars and bikes and
madness.
Just, yeah. That's crazy.
So that was a first for me. My dog got hit by a dirt bike while I was loading up after the hunt and ran off. Can somebody help me find it?
Yeah. Yeah, so, but it is a cool group, though, because quite a few of these dogs have been relocated.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's been good. So maybe that's what the push is they're starting to realize that, hey, man, I can jump on social media with a picture of my dog.
And get it
and
back.
And possibly get it back.
So maybe it's not happening more. It's just more visible now.
Right. Yeah, it could be.
That could be the case. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Second segment of Nevada Backcountry coming up right now. If you missed the previous segment, you can always go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, or go on Apple Podcasts and just search for Nevada Backcountry. We're going to jump right back into the lost dog thing. Over the break there, Dave, I mentioned to you, that's one of my huge pet peeves. I don't care how good a dog looks when it points or if it doesn't have basic recall.
Yeah.
That should be the number, especially with where we hunt with cliffs, rattlesnakes, all that. That's a huge pet peeve of mine. I can't stand when somebody's like, Clifford, here, Clifford, come, Clifford. And it goes on for like 2-3 minutes and you see the dog bouncing around out there.
Yeah, way off on the far ridge.
Yeah, I'm like, man, get your dang dog back. This stresses me out. And I was thinking about that Moonrock situation. And that's, man, when I get back to the truck and I'm done, first things first, dog's going in the crate and getting water. Right. And on this lost dog thing, and I don't know, you know, this is pure speculation. I don't know if they were running e-collars, what they had, but all of my dogs get one of those satellite collars.
Yeah, yeah. Those Garmin.
Track them on my watch and on the handheld thing. And there is too much of a good thing. Aaron and I had this discussion, like those... what's it like, the Alpha 100 or whatever?
Is Alpha or Atlas 100 or something? Yeah.
Where it's like touch screen, big mat, all that. I run that Pro 550 Plus and it's just a simple arrow and a distance. And I can run 3 dogs off it. And that for me is just a simple way to keep track of my dogs in the field. But man, that whatever you use, come here, whatever.
Like, yeah, that's got to get tuned in.
That's a day one deal.
You know, there's a lot of things that can distract a dog. And if they're not finely tuned into just bird hunting, I've been with hunters where this has happened, where a jackrabbit comes busting out of the brush and just falls to the wall running and the dog just breaks loose and it chases that stupid rabbit over the hill. And you're like, seriously, dude?
Get it back.
Like,
get your dog under control.
Why is he chasing rabbits?
Yeah.
So there are, because then it takes away. Then you spend a good chunk of the day trying to find this stupid dog that's chasing a rabbit or a coyote or a
whatever.
Freaking
herd of deer that's gotten up. I've seen that. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree. The recall, that's one thing that's really got to get tuned up, because that would alleviate some of these lost dog.
Oh, absolutely.
Posts.
I don't think it's cruel. I mean, I have that e-collar, so if I want, I can turn that sucker up
and
stim them and get them, you know, completely refocus them on this is what we're doing. Now, knock on wood, thank God, because I am so anal retentive about that recall thing, I haven't had to stim a dog in years.
Yeah.
So I'm, knock on wood, I'm lucky with that. I can just tone them, the 2 beeps, and they come right back. Yeah. That's if they're like over a ridge or something.
Yeah, no, Gage is really good about that. I've got I'll tone him.
Yep.
And then if he doesn't respond, then I'll hit the vibrate button. And usually that's as far as I got to go. Once the vibrate button hits, he knows the next option is not vibrate.
It's not. Yeah, he's about to have a bad day.
Yeah, he's because he's been zapped a few times during the other events, during training and during some hikes and stuff where he's done some stupid things. And he knows the process. So most of the time, like we just went on a really nice hike over the weekend, just up Mount Rose. We, you know, went up quite a ways and he was off leash. I know all you Karens out there, keep your dog on a leash when you're on the trail. So he was off leash and just doing his thing. But every time I just said, Gage, you know, too far, or he'd stop
and sit.
He'd come back, or sometimes he would just stop and sit.
Oh, and wait for you.
Until I moved up closer to him, and then I just waved my hand, and he would start sniffing,
doing his thing again,
for squirrels or whatever he's doing.
Did you get a bunch of quail up while you were up there?
Yeah, there were quite a few
quail
up there.
There's a pile of them up there right now. So, and I want to mention, for people sitting there at home listening, scratching your heads, going, what, Nevada Trucker Home? So there's a Facebook page. And no affiliation, free plug for the page. I don't know who the admin is. I don't know who runs it. It's called Nevada Trucker Hunters.
Yeah.
And it is a phenomenal, my wife is a member on there. It's a phenomenal resource for people as far as if you get in that situation where, God forbid, something happens, you're looking for a dog, or you have a dog join you out in the field and you're going, where did this thing come from?
Whose dog is this?
Yeah, you can get on there. I think it's public. You just have to request to be a member.
Right. Yeah. You just have to, you just click whatever it is, follow or what have you, whatever that word is. And then the administrator will either let you in or not. I mean, I think they'll generally like go to your page to make sure that you are a hunter and you're not like an anti.
Pushing your OnlyFans or something.
Exactly. You know, you know, something like that. Or you're an anti that wants to disrupt things or get the site into jail or something by doing stupid stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, and then
you're in.
And then you're in, and it's great. My wife, Gina's in it, too, and she's always telling me, hey, they're doing really good.
Yeah. Somebody did good somewhere.
Because when you're in Nevada long enough, nobody tells you, like, where they're hunting, but then they take a picture of them with their six chucker in the back of their tailgate with the mountain range behind them, and you're like, I know that. I know where that is.
Yeah, so, hey, there's a tip for folks out there if you're just getting into it and you don't want to burn your own spots.
Yeah, blur it out, baby.
Yeah, blur it or just find a rock to lay the birds on if you want to snap a picture like that.
Right.
Because,
a lot of us are okay with the full picture. It's beautiful. Yeah. I love the scenery in the background.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Those are text pictures, not post pictures. Yeah. Because especially there are those very easily identifiable mountains in the state.
And so,
I guess if it's just like rolling hills of cheatgrass and some rim rock.
You're like, I don't know where the heck that could be.
Yeah, that could be anywhere.
Is that six or is that five or is that down in 111? I don't know where the heck is that.
But if you got, let me see, what could I say that wouldn't? I'm just not going to name a peak that's easily distinguishable. But they're out there for sure. So.
Yeah, you see them, especially with the caption like, me and the guys were up and we all limited out and we're back in the truck by 10 a.m. Yeah. Dude, the next weekend, you're going to have 30 trucks out there.
Yes. Yeah. And we can, you know what, real quick, Dave, I talked about it for a minute on the last thing, but before we get into lost hunters and then hunter retention, chucker etiquette.
Yeah.
Sidebar, this is a squirrel moment, but chucker etiquette. Here are the rules that, and again, this is more for like that newer crowd of upland hunters out there that are just getting into it. Maybe you got a season or two under your belt. The rules I try to follow are basically, if it's my rig, it's your spot. So if I drive and pay for gas, we're not going to one of my spots. We're going to one of your spots.
Yeah.
That was the etiquette thing. Same, vice versa. You drive your gas, not a problem. I'll cough up a spot. That's where we're going. Same thing, like if you are splitting lunches or gas or any of that, basically my dogs, I shouldn't have to pack a lunch.
Right.
If you don't have dogs, you know what I mean? If you're taking a new guy that doesn't have a dog and we're bringing my dogs and running them, crack open the cooler and share.
Right.
That's the etiquette thing of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of that unwritten rule set. You just, why I'm going through this. This is an attempt to overall make everybody better partners
out there.
Cause I've gone through it. You've gone through it. You take somebody to a spot and you show up the next weekend and they're there with their friends.
Yeah.
And you're going, whoa, man, come on. And I'm all for this plays into the retention thing. I'm all for helping out. In fact, I had a conversation last night at jiu-jitsu with a guy, and he's never shot a limit and kind of struggling, doesn't have a bird dog, but he's been out there hiking with his German Shepherd.
Oh, geez.
And he'll shoot a bird here, a bird there, but just kind of going through it. And I thought about it and was like, you know, I got no problem. Somebody like that who isn't sitting at home complaining about not being taught how to do it,
right,
is just going out, putting in the miles, driving, trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I got no problem with a guy like that. Hey, man, let's go out a couple times. Yeah. I'll take you out a couple times. I might not take you up on it, but offer to pay for gas at least if I'm taking you out and helping you.
Yeah, exactly.
Offer to pay for gas. I might just say, oh, no, don't worry about it. It's the gesture that counts.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and then have the cooler.
Yeah, have a cooler, and hey, I'll go out and I'll help you out. It's the people out there that are like, man, I really want to get into hunting, or I want to be a hunter and I want to do this, that, or the other thing, and are just waiting for the like, here's the play-by-play, here's how you do it.
The step-by-step.
Like, yeah, I'm kind of like, man, I don't know about this one. That might not be the thing. Anyway, there are the unwritten rules of chugger hunting as I see them. You know, if I come across, as my wife pointed out this morning, I can come across like an a-hole sometimes. And I don't mean to be, but I'm getting older and I'm kind of like, man.
There are unwritten rules to a lot of the things we do. It's a respect issue.
100%.
It just comes down to respect.
And those are kind of like minor transgressions, I guess, if you break one of those.
I mean, it's still an old school activity. So, yeah, that's how I see it. I'm with you on all that.
And number one rule, and this is a non-negotiable, don't shoot my dog.
Oh, yeah.
Know what you're doing.
Yeah.
All right. So on that note, let's take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Coming up next, we've got more Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, thank you to Battle Born Tree Service, for hunters by hunters, for sponsoring the show. And we got one more thought on chugger hunting, I think, right?
Yeah, kind of like the ethics thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just being respectful to other hunters. If you come up, have a plan A, a plan B, and maybe a plan C when you go out hunting.
Ooh, this is a good one, yeah.
Yeah, because if you go up to an area and you see a truck or two already parked at the trailhead or at the bottom of the mountain, don't park there too and then walk up the same canyon. That's happened in the past to me, and it's like, you're up there. Granted, it's public land. I know a lot of people out there right now saying, dude, shut up, David. It's public land. We can go wherever we want, you know, just deal with it. You're right. You can go wherever you want. There is no doubt about it. There's still that respect issue, that hunter's 100% respect issue. Like, oh man, there's people up here hunting. Let's not screw up their day. Because for one, we don't know where they are. We could pepper them. We could shoot their dog. We don't know.
Yeah.
So let's not just randomly go cruising up this canyon as well. So just have a plan B or a C where you're like, hey, let's back out. Let's go to that other canyon.
I've had both types of interactions, and I got a story from three or four seasons ago. If you pull up and there are other vehicles there and suddenly chucker landing right by where you parked, oh, look, I get it. You want to wail away. But here's the situation. And it turned out to be a dad and his kid, so I wasn't too miffed about it. But I had gotten there super early. I had hiked all the way up to this ridge line, got a couple birds, a couple more coveys that flushed back way down the mountain by where I had parked.
Yeah.
And somebody pulls up and starts blazing away and killing those birds. They're not my birds. They're public land. I get it. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But maybe if you find yourself in that situation where you pull into a spot and there's a bunch of birds landing right there, maybe look around and think like, oh, where are these things? This is weird that they flush down here. I'd spent all morning working that covey. And just to have him get hammered by these guys. Like I said, it was a super nice guy. Yeah, and
20
he had
feet from the truck.
He had his young kid.
Yeah. It's tempting because you're out there for a reason. You're like, oh, dude, they're right there.
Well, but and that's still, that thing, right? It's a kid. He was with his kid, and his kid was doing a majority of the shooting. So I was like, oh, this isn't one of those situations, man. Yeah. Hey, good, more power to you for getting your kid out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to complain too much about it. Well, then I've also had the other situation, and ironically enough, they were Californians. But they were the coolest dudes. We had just gotten on a bunch of coveys up top, and they were flushing back down the ridge, kind of to where you would pull into park and everything. And these guys came up, kind of watched everything unfold and all that, and then waited till we got back down there. And they said, hey, you guys pulling out, do you mind if we go try to get back on those coveys? Because they were running uphill going back over at that point. And it was like, man, you guys could have just popped out and started blazing away. Like, thank you for having the patience and
yeah,
everything.
And the respect
and
everything.
Yeah, just sit there, and they watched us work that covey. And yeah, and that's why I told them. I said, no, absolutely. This is you guys have fun.
Yeah.
Go for it.
And that's the nice part about it is when people do that instead of just
blazing
up the mountain. And, you know, then you guys, you run into them and you're like, oh, dude. Come on.
And I'm always more inclined to cough up some stuff to guys. Like I told those guys that day, I said, yeah, absolutely. Hey, go after those. And then, hey, you know, this rock formation, when you get on top, backside of that's loaded up with birds right now. Good luck.
Cause you're comfortable.
Cause I'm like, yeah, thank you for not. Yeah,
exactly. You're more willing to maybe divulge a little bit of what you just experienced the morning. And
yes.
You're like, yeah, okay, cool. But when you've got the other side of the coin, you got the, you know, the doofuses and the, you don't.
I'm less inclined to be helpful.
Less inclined. I am not at all.
What are you guys seeing? Nothing, man.
Yeah.
We're out of here. I sometimes think about that, Dave. I hope I don't come across as pretentious because I think I'm a fairly easygoing guy and easy to get along with. But sometimes when I think about all the stuff that runs through my head when I have these interactions, I'm like, thank God I have somewhat of a filter left.
Yeah.
Because there are those situations where I want to just have a tirade. And instead I'm like,
I'll keep my mouth shut and I just won't say anything. I won't be rude or like snarky or anything. I'll just be like, no. Yeah.
I don't think we're in that situation of like old man yells at clouds where it's just you and I griping in an echo chamber.
Right.
I know friends that have the same gripes like, man, I worked that covey all morning. I was just starting to pick it apart and here some guys pulled up and just hammered them and left.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you hear it from all the people that you know that hunt.
I think everybody's
stuff.
Got the same
Everyone's
gripes.
Got the similar story. So that was that. So
okay.
Now,
so moving on from that. Lost hunters.
Yeah, it has been another season where I don't know if it's just the social media aspect of
I don't think this
everybody,
one is.
Everybody just puts everything on social media now, and so the population of that is increasing or what, but it seems like a lot more hunters and recreationalists are just getting themselves lost.
Yeah, so 2025 lost hikers. And I looked at all the news articles. 2025, lost hunters. And I looked at all the articles. More so than in years past, I think for sure. And I don't think it's just an exposure thing.
Yeah.
I think it's, well, we could talk a little bit about the boom that went on during COVID. When social distancing, about the last thing you had to do was go hunt. There was a whole crop of new people coming into the sport and looking at a map and going, man, there's no roads in here. I'm going to head out and have an adventure.
Right.
And that's great. I support that because that's what I do. It's not just the new people. There are the one right now I'm looking at on my phone, experienced hunter reported missing near Estacada. Search teams.
Is that California?
No, that's Estacada. In Mount Hood.
Oregon. Oregon.
Yeah, Mount Hood Wilderness up there. He's missing right now.
Yeah, and there's one in Idaho, too.
There's one in Idaho.
Yeah, there's another one in Idaho that went out hunting and didn't come back home on Sunday, and they're
looking
trying
for
to
him.
Find out where he is. And
there was the guy that just 20 days in the Sierra.
Yeah.
He stumbled out, survived.
Yeah, at least he had the sense about him that, you know, he knew how to survive out there. That's another thing that a lot of folks don't. They don't know how to build a quick shelter or a fire, or not only that, but just don't have the products in their backpack, their day pack or what have you, which a couple ounces extra in your day pack could save your life. So, but yeah, then the two hunters, that was kind of weird.
Well, they got hit by lightning.
Yeah, because they were hunkered down underneath a tree.
Yeah, that was the deal.
The lightning hit the tree and
killed them in the process.
Killed them in the process. That's just weird, like alternate universe kind of weird stuff.
Well, and I think we take for granted, I mean, I've hunted plenty of thick timber and Montana and all that, like North Idaho, where you can't see 50 yards in any direction.
Friggin' Northern Oregon, it's thick as heck.
I just take for granted sometimes because in Nevada, it's so easy, like, okay, you can see forever.
Yeah.
Like, I know where I came from, and I don't think I have an exceptional sense of direction or anything, but it's kind of that common sense deal of, okay, I know my truck is downhill or right. whatever. It's like, if I just keep going this direction, I'm going to cut this road.
Well, and today you've got track, you can, yep. you got your phone with you and it, you know, your Onyx hit the tracker. Like when we were out there looking for elk and stuff, we get into those thick trees. I'd hit the tracker so that I knew, okay,
I can follow this yeah, out.
I can follow this back out instead of like, huh, this is thick. I'm not really sure what direction to travel now because I can't see anything because it's such thick trees.
I'm in the bottom of this draw and I can't see.
Yeah.
So I don't really know where I'm going. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I just look at the, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Or the Garmin InReach.
They'll do it too.
So I have things that'll help me figure out how to get back to the point where I started, the trailhead, whatever it might be. Today's technology, it's people are going into these situations, the backcountry, without any of this technology. Because it's most of it's almost free.
Yeah. I mean, a basic membership with OnX is
$39.
Yeah. Now, I could see
for the year.
Yeah. I think $39.99 or something.
Yeah.
I could see
each state. Yeah.
If you're like fatigued and you know, the old, what's that called when they, the hypothermia victims,
right?
They always find them like naked. They've yeah. stripped down because for whatever reason, their body thinks they're like cooking.
Right.
So they start stripping down and then die of hypothermia. So I could see like a situation where, okay, I ran out of food or water. Even pre-technology yeah. days, I get not wanting to carry a ton of weight in the mountains.
Yes.
But we talked about this on the phone when we were discussing what we were going to talk about on the show. You know, we were in agreement. I never go anywhere in my pack. I don't care if I'm going, you know, a couple hundred yards, whatever. Pack's coming with me. I've got a rain shell, a synthetic puffy, a water filtration thing,
yeah.
a small first aid kit, and some snacks.
Yeah.
And a tarp.
I always carry at least two of those little butane torch lighters.
Yeah, a lighter. Yeah, that's in my bino harness.
Yeah, yep. exactly. That's in my bino harness. And then I've got my little, like a pill bag or pill bottle that has Vaseline soaked
cotton balls. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A little fire starter.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, because I've been caught once in some crappy weather and I hunkered down underneath this like rock outcropping.
Waited it out, got a fire going.
I knew I was going to have to be there for a while. So yeah. I grabbed a bunch of sagebrush and some dried up stuff and I started a fire up against the rocks and I just hunkered down there for, you know, about 4 or 5 hours and let the rain and slush come over me and do its thing and then got the heck out of Dodge.
And it's not a ton of weight.
All of that stuff you mentioned is what, max about 2 pounds?
Yeah, I think honestly the heaviest thing I consistently carry is I always have a gallon of water on me. I've got the bladder and then yeah. plus that Nalgene bottle.
Yeah.
So that and my water filtration kit and maybe 8.6, 8.4 pounds 8. Per 3, gallon?
8.36, yeah.
Look at
that. Yeah.
Can you give it to me to the thousandth?
To the thousandth?
No, yeah, there's 8 pounds. Maybe the pack's 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Then Puffy, yeah. rain shell, whatever little gadgets and gizmos. I mean, Max, I'm carrying like 20 pounds.
Right.
So, hey, do not go anywhere. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry coming up in a moment. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry right now, sponsored by Rightful Liberty Arms. Man, with this final segment, Dave, we've talked about chukar, lost dogs, lost hunters, our thoughts on some chukar etiquette stuff. Let's switch gears and talk about, you want to call it retention of new hunters?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, as you know, we've been researching a couple series for us to do on the show.
Yeah.
And one of them is youth and women in hunting and, you know, in the hunting sports. So there's a thing called R3 that a lot of conservation organizations, departments of wildlife and fishing games and stuff use. It is reactivation, retention, and recruitment.
Okay.
3 R's. Over the last several years, there's been this increase in women and youth involvement.
Big increase.
Yeah, a good one. The hunting world, you know. May it be fishing, bird hunting, big game, small game. It's been a pretty good increase. They've really been going. So the kicker is, from what I've been reading, is that it's right around the 3-year mark.
Okay.
Those numbers drop off.
Oh, yeah. There's an attrition rate.
Exactly. So you've got these folks coming in.
Okay.
All excited about hunting. Then after, like I said, on the average, it's 2.2. 2.7 years or something like that. They fall off.
Disappear entirely.
They disappear entirely. Or, yeah. They just,
and now they're
just
basing
kind of
that off like license sales and
license
stuff?
License sales, okay. And then the demographic within those license sales.
Right, right.
You know, the fishing license, hunting license, and then tag applications and stuff. So, and this is nationally. And there was a survey done, and I'm reading more into it, and we're hoping to have a full couple shows just about this.
And have some, like, a database show,
and,
not
yeah,
just...
get some better content and some better numbers. They're just showing that in the surveys of some of these individuals is that they, it's not the point that they lose interest in hunting or fishing. They don't feel that they are up to doing it. They don't have the training. They don't have the know-how to continue going in this sense. So one of them stated that they always felt that they were never truly prepared going into the field.
Yeah, join the club.
Right. So, and then you've got your other individuals that...
Every time I think I got it figured out, right. I get handed a crap sandwich.
Yeah. No. And then you've got the folks that just due to anxieties or impatience, they may get a tag for 1 or 2 years and they never get to, you know, pull the bow back or shoot the gun or harvest something. And they're like, oh, this is nuts. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not wasting my time. So there's several variables, and as we get deeper into it, it's really actually intriguing reading about this and just going, huh. And then there's the intimidation factor. The women and youth who are coming in who have, say, a mentor, but the mentor is a hardcore trophy hunter. So they're going into the field with this individual. They may want to shoot whatever they can just to get something under their belt,
the
excitement
yeah.
of the hunt. I want to be able to figure out, can I process this animal? Can I do this? Can I backpack it on?
And, a spoon and crock pot buck.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And I've shot plenty of those and they've been fantastic.
Yep.
Their mentor ends up being kind of a jerk about it. I guess that's a bad way of putting it. But the mentor's expecting a certain caliber of the hunt.
Puts the emphasis on the wrong thing.
Puts the stress on them. Yeah. Expects certain things out of these individuals, which turns them off of hunting. That was another one that was kind of floating around out, was the mentorship. Finding the mentor that actually motivates you and makes you want to keep trying to be better. Figure out the processes instead of one that's like, no, you're not shooting that. No, you're not doing that. No, this is the way you do this. And just being super rigid and then just completely pulling the energy out of the person. And they're just like, I'm out.
Like a guy that gets on air and gripes about unwritten rules of trucker hunting.
Completely.
That guy, yeah.
Those guys. Exactly what I'm saying.
Hey, here's the world as I see it.
Yeah. You know, or the type of person that waits until you really F things up and then they just pound you on it, just hammer you. So there is that
component of
retention.
Yeah. Okay.
And that seems to be pretty tough. I mean, to maintain that retention, there's a lot of times where, oh, cool, we got them to buy licenses. That's it. And then you just turn the switch and run back out to try to get more people to buy licenses or put in for tags and not really following through or keeping up with the individuals that you've already got on board and then figuring out, okay, how was your experience? What was it about the experience that you liked, that you didn't like, that you'd like to change? And maintaining those conversations to keep these individuals activated.
And you know, I'm not great about that stuff. I remember saying to you on that elk hunt with Logan, we were laying there that one night and you were like, man, he is really going through it. And I think I just kind of shrugged and was like, well, he's going to figure out if it's for him or not. And I need to maybe dial that back a little bit and start being more like, well, hey, this is the beauty of it. These are the struggles of it. And I think what most people underestimate about hunting in general, we've all had those years where you put together a run and it's like, man, I found what I was looking for. I killed what I was looking for. It was, you know, good weather. It's the whole thing seems just kind of like
fell into place.
It was perfect. Yeah. And I think about myself like, man, the last couple of years I've been on the struggle bus. Either I didn't turn up what I wanted to turn up. I put too much emphasis onto one buck that I, you know, should have just killed something and gone home or whatever it may be. Or I just didn't get an opportunity.
Yeah, the stars didn't align for you that year. I've had years, I've at a couple where it's been 3 or 4 years where I just never brought anything home. And then, yeah sure, you get on yourself. You're like, dude, I suck. This is horrible. 3 years, I've had 4 tags. I've brought home nothing. I've brought home sorrow and misery. Again, going back to the social media component.
Yes.
You get these folks get on social media and they see the 12-year-old with the 30-inch muley and they see all these whitetail, whacked on the ground, and you see so-and-so with bull elk and cow elk and antelope, and it's like glorified. And these folks sit there and look at these pictures and you're like, dude, that doesn't look hard. Doesn't look too hard. Look at that kid did it, and that girl did it, and this did it, and that did it. And you're like, dude, this shouldn't be difficult. And then
hunting is hard. It can be very, very hard.
Well, it takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of know-how. It takes a lot of preparation to get to that point. Yeah, sure, you've got those folks that drive out to a hunting site. Let's camp here, undo their gear, and there's a buck standing in camp. That does happen. I mean, a good friend of mine who has been trying to shoot a snowcock for like the last 4 years, up there religiously chasing snowcocks, just like, this is going to be the death of me trying to get one of these stupid things. Somebody else goes out, doesn't move 50 yards from where they parked the truck, and 2 snowcocks jump on a rock and smokes one of them. Like, well, how hard can this be?
Well, like I said, that's a one-off,
It happens. Those are the ones that you kind of take out of the equation. Mm-hmm. When you're analyzing the data, you're like, okay, these are outliers. This is stuff that this does not happen. This is the lottery ticket stuff. So move those out so it doesn't skew the data. And now let's figure this out.
I don't care if a picture's worth 1,000 words or not. They don't tell the whole story.
No.
So for all those like picturesque sunsets that get posted, all that kind of stuff are the long, cold, wet, miserable days in the mountains where you may find yourself jackhammering in your sleep because you're freezing to death. For every one of those, like getting a set of horns in your hands and going, holy smokes, I did it.
Right.
I did it with a recurve. Right. This is amazing. For every one of those experiences is the freezing overnight. Oh, man, I didn't bring a thick enough sleeping bag.
Yeah, day 20 of the hunt.
Thank you to Shooting Performance Institute for sponsoring the show. And do not go anywhere. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next.